Well, I really want to apologize, and I'm supposed to be the discussant and respond to what the heads of NIOSH and OSHA say, and they have started talking. Fortunately, I think I know what they're going to talk about, so I should be okay for a couple minutes. This particular project that Jay's undertaking, I'm really enthusiastic about. One of the things that strikes me in teaching young people is how little history they know, which is really our fault because we don't teach it. And so the little column in the journal about past and present, I think, is always an instructive thing. I'm always able to use those. So for APHA, this is really a worksheet that Jay's given us here. And I'm going to ask people to use it. And let me just say, now I, like many of you I recognize, may have sort of a hobbyist interest in history. I enjoy reading it, but that's not really what we want this project for. Not for people like us that sort of are interested in it. We really need it because it helps determine how people do their work going forward. If we can make sure that the historical understanding of what went before is there. And so just let me give you some examples of things that I know are going on. And I hope in this project, I know Jay's intention is not only to look at the history of APHA as a large organization, but to help all of our sections and other components do that. So for example, I'm ashamed to say this because it dates me. A number of years ago, the Occupational Health and Safety section had our 75th anniversary, which happened to occur during the meeting that was in Chicago. And as part of our celebrations for that 75th anniversary, we paid for on a shoestring budget, a little video on occupational safety and health in the United States. And that video is still being shown all over the country in health and safety courses. So when we spend time and do these projects, students are interested in them and they pay attention to them. In 2014, it'll be our 100th anniversary of our section. The next year is the 100th anniversary of the environment section. So these are opportunities for us to work together and build a momentum that will culminate in the 150th anniversary of APHA, of course, is what we're eventually pointing toward. But all of these history projects are important and they can be of use to work. I remember a few years ago, the public health nursing section had an excellent sort of historical overview with a lot of photos of public health nursing. This work doesn't have to just be at the national level. I want to recognize one of our past presidents, Iris Shannon, sitting there in the audience from Chicago. Iris has been active in Chicago in doing a lot of work in oral histories of nursing and community health activities around the city of Chicago. So when we bring this past to life, students really lap it up. So I hope everybody signs one of these sheets. I hope that you go back to your sections and caucuses and document how we have to write this stuff down and get it in a format that people can remember. People told me, for example, that when Dr. Jenkins was speaking at the opening ceremony, a lot of people didn't even know the history that he was recounting. So this is critical for us, it's critical for our association, and I'm sure this session will be good. And the main thing we're gonna do is trap you into working on the history project. That's the real purpose of the session. So have a good session, and I'll see you later.
And thank you, especially with Linda, on the eve of your taking the office of president. So thank you again. And I'm just going to pass these out and leave the other forms in the back. There. It will parallel what we'll be talking about. So. So let me tell you a little bit about the project. As Linda was referring to, I felt so heartened during this, the opening session, to find out how many of the incredible speakers we had at the opening session refer to history, starting with Georges, our executive director. And Ted had pointed out to me today, I have not seen this month's issue of our journal, the 100th anniversary of our journal. And Ted told me that there's a foreword that's written by Georges, and with obviously with help from our experts and advisors. But he has taken a great interest in the history. And to be followed along by the speakers who talked about Colorado, who talked about, and Bill Jenkins going back to look at Tuskegee and in its full history. I mean, these were all examples, I think, of the incredible power of history. And that's what I want to mention in my talk is not so much going to be didactic, but rather what we're thinking about doing, how we're thinking about doing it, and to engage you, because it's our history. And so let me talk a little bit. First of all, our last history update was on our 100th anniversary, and that was 1972. So we're out of date. I'm sorry about this if, because the history, I don't know why the slide skips, and I better stop the motion here. Try to go back if I can. Yeah. And this was our 100th anniversary history. And it was written by Nancy Bernstein, who I've tried to find Nancy Bernstein, and I can't. I've learned that she was a reporter for The Nation's Health. This is a reporter, Teddy, here from the Nation's Health. And so this is part of the intrigue. I want to mention this, history's mysteries, and try and engage people to track down some of these threads that would only be known locally, or would only be known by an affiliate, or a section, or through other professionals or affinity groups. So we want to update this. So we do want to have a formal updating of the history, but we want to do much more than that. Now, we do have APHA archives, and this is the KFOR report that was done back in 1969. And excuse me, you may have to bear with me as I fight with a timing on here. And but we need to do more than that, as I say, to really capture and to tell our stories. And so that's what I've been doing, and this is part of the inventory that you can help with. We have, as Linda Ray said, and you all know so well, we have section histories, we have histories of the World Federation of Public Health. This is a copy of the Tennessee Public Health history, and I'm glad to have Ted here. And so these are what we want to begin to capture in the inventory. Now, we want to also, as I said here, that our speakers spoke to the power of history's lessons in our opening sessions when we heard about Du Bois. And I began to collect some of these things, but you all will know more about it. This is from Les Breslau, when he's looking back, reflecting on where we've been. Again, the motto we've taken is that it's our history, we own it, we should tell our story. And we do have a history website, and so the APHA does have one site for history, and it was Carla Pierce, our archivist, has put together, but it needs much more. It's only a rough sketch, a rough timeline of events. And importantly, what we've talked about, what both Ted Brown and Liz Fee are particularly good at reminding me, is we need to put our history into context. You know, it's not this simple linear, obviously, as we all know, not a simple linear progression, but they're people, the association, and events interacting in these larger tectonic plates, and we're right in the middle of another era of tectonic plate movement with our national elections. So there's much more to be done, and we want to do it local, national, global. And I'm going to come back to this again. We are, as a pilot, thinking about cyber age, naturally. What can we do now that was not available in 1972? And so it is not only for our members and our colleagues, but we want to think about the public, and this whole question about health literacy, and just thinking that there's over 200 million Americans do go on the website to get information. So one of the things we're talking about is to be very mindful of the info age. And I've talked to many museum directors, and they talk about infotainment, the importance of giving people information so they want to come back again. So it's not a one stop, we've had a lecture, thank you, we're taking the children, and this was good, but to come back for more. So suggestions along these lines. So what are we going to do? As you know, I'm president of the Medicine and Public Health Initiative. We have a website. We want to set up a pilot APHA History Project website where we can try things out, where people can, all of us can send in suggestions and some kinds of material so we can shape the project that we think collectively is the most effective. And I'm going to talk about some of these little button issues up here. And that's partly it's about the history project. That's the first thing. A second part is explaining it. You know, what is the history project? Again, these are for our members and our colleagues about getting our story out and getting involved. You know, how can a person or an organization contribute? We want to put up some of our primary examples of primary APHA sources so someone can see what's there. Maybe they know other things we should begin to add. We want to do something more than, again, the history, but it's also to try to have a set of essays or synthesis to talk about major issues and themes that APHA has dealt with in public health and in population health over the world. So we can, someone looking for something more specific than a history, these larger issues would have a place to go, and again, we tell our story. The other, again, as I mentioned, we want to talk about the context that shaped the times. You know, APHA was founded 2 years before Alexander Graham Bell got a patent for the telephone, 7 years after the end of the Civil War. What was the times like? We also want to put up other public health history resources. We want to have additional links, and I'm going to come back with some illustration of these. Some classic reports of health. So for example, the Shattuck Report, or the Rose Report that talked about public health, but bringing us up to the present. And so we want to have addresses on there. And likewise, we'll have something in the end on guidance and how to get involved. So we are going to have a pilot website. And again, I think your information and your collection will help us. I want to point out that there's much out there. This is the cyber age. I've been going to museums, and libraries. I'm trying to become a sort of online student of Ted and Liz to kind of at least get to be more familiar with the sources. I spent the year doing this. I went to the New York Historic Society and in their library, and I found a copy of Stephen Smith's book, The City That Was. He wrote this and published it, I believe, in 1911. And looking back to what was New York like when APHA was founded. And I opened the book, and you know how cooperative libraries, they produced the book and said, sit and look at it. And I opened it up, and it was signed by Stephen Smith, given to the historic library. And I found that kind of connection was important. And I think it doesn't have to be my way, but connecting us to the history, bringing us forward is important. The other thing was, I said, well, what about, I just went on a line to find out what was some information on this. You know, I Googled it. I always like to remark that if 15 years ago I was speaking before an audience and said I Googled so-and-so, they would probably look with horror. Now you say I've Googled someone, they say, oh yes, of course. But what popped up in Google Books was a complete digitalized copy of the city that was. So we're going to not only locate these things, one of the aims, and again, we have to explore the resources, is to begin digitalizing some of these key documents and making them available. And if we can organize them properly, we could be a kind of go-to place for public health information, featuring our association, but talking about public health more broadly, public health in a person's community, in their state, or internationally. So I don't think these are unrealistic, incidentally. That's the other thing we've talked about with Ted and Liz, and we're talking with George's Benjamin. What's a sustainable, realistic project? And something that's evergreen, that isn't static, and a place for discussion and ideas as well. So these are some that are, as you'll see in the form, some of the things we wanted you to think about to make suggestions. We'll start putting this online, so there'll be comments and other suggestions that can come in. And you can say, if anything, I may be over-enthusiastic about it, but I think we're working on a realistic plan with some highlights. So let me give you a little of my little, just some story things here of things that I've learned. This is the famous Shattuck report because I've interested, started to go out over the last year and buy original first editions of some of these reports. And of course, the Shattuck report was inspired by the Chadwick report in England. And I won't go into the whole story, but in England, when I got a copy of the Chadwick report, it said this copy of the Chadwick report went to the Sudbury Poor Commission, and a name was signed on it. So I emailed the book dealer who I got it from in the UK, and she proceeded to say, well, this is one of her interests, is the poor law, and it's antecedents, and we, you know, we're talking about poverty here. So I got into this whole notion of the history of poverty. But she added a dimension to this, that those who served, the Chadwick Report, as you know, was a kind of atlas of the laboring class. He did some other things on police work as well, among other things. But it was an inventory of the status of the health of the laboring population at that time. And the poor were seen as a problem, what to do with, quote, the poor, if that doesn't sound, you know, inspired many writers to comment, such as Dickens' Oliver Twist, and we'll come back to that in a moment. But she explained to me, this is what a gentleman did at the time. If you were a gentleman in a community, you would aspire, this is one of your civic duties. You could show you were a good citizen by being a member of the poor lord. So I began to see how many people are sources of information for this. This is the cover of the Shattuck report, but what I want to tell you is something I got into what I call history on the fly, in parentheses, LEAF, and why this became so much more important to me. We'll let me just see if come back to that in a moment. So one, we're going to use the primary APHA sources, again, our 100th anniversary, with proper clearance, when we could put up some key articles. Secondly, as I mentioned, the other part is synthesizing some of the major themes. Last year was water, an early theme that's run through our whole association, the sanitary movement, up through social justice, and I'll make a comment a little bit about this later. But again, the third part is lining up other resources. National Library of Medicine, Ted's University has, and to have something on programs. The Public Health Museum in, for example, in Massachusetts, and the Public Health Service has their own office. So we want to be able to put up links and sites so people can see the vast amount of information that is out there. We also want to bring in our colleagues and our affinity groups. Surely, if we're going to tell the story of public health education, we would want to, in fact, have the Association of Schools of Public Health, because APHA and ASPH formed a partnership which is now CEIF, an independent accrediting body that has so much to say and so much rightful authority about public health. But there are others, and these are just some copies from the American Podiatric Medical Association that had an issue on promoting public health. We want to do that with our fellow health professionals. We also want to talk about some of these themes through action. This is a copy that I got of the second edition of Lillian Wall's book on the house on Henry Street, which was a kind of comprehensive intervention to help with particularly women in poverty to not only to help them with their immediate welfare, but also give them education for trades so that they could become a force. And inside, I, again, did not know this. I just opened it up. It happened to be signed by Lillian Wall. And these are my little mysteries, like who was Marion Norman, that she thought enough to give this book to her mother and her grandmother on Christmas Day in 1923. So these are little things that help me connect with the people side of public health and those that are out there. But also Sedgwick. I got a copy of a book and opened it up, and it had come from the library of William Thompson Sedgwick. And of course, we will be giving one of the highest awards on Tuesday evening of the Sedgwick Award. And he himself was, of course, a famous professor of public health at MIT. And then when I looked further into the copy, that this was first owned by Thomas B., and I believe it's Newhole, I have to look this up. He was a commissioner of health. It's dated December 1877. And Professor Sedgwick bought this as a used book. So I feel I was in a good lineage out buying used books, say just as Professor Sedgwick would say I should do. So I'm indeed a kind of a student of along the line of these great people. I want to say something about our founders, of a theme. Again, this is a personal theme, and we'll see how it turns out, that APHA today is what it was when it was founded. The same principle, the same struggles, the vocabulary has changed, the times have changed, intervention have changed. But I wanted to point out this book by Henry. This was actually a collection And this was a speech that Henry Bowditch made. And Henry Bowditch, I just want to mention about social justice, a very considered, very influential talk he gave at one of the international conventions on public health. And as you can see, this is 1877. And Henry Bowditch was very much involved in social justice. Before the Civil War, he was from Massachusetts, Henry Bowditch organized a society called the Anti-Manhunting Society. And what they did was to get those who came to get fugitive slaves from the South. As you know, they were considered, quote, property by federal law and Supreme Court judge. So Bowditch and his colleagues tried many things. And one of the things, and he writes about this, it's his son collected his works, and he writes about this at some length, organized an anti-manhunting society. They would track down these fugitive slave catchers and literally run them out of town. So this was true hands-on action. And you read his marvelous, you know, presentation about public hygiene in America, and know that there's this whole other part of this person. And I think these things should be recognized, because these are our themes today. These give us this kind of unbroken chain that we're in. Doctors in Medicine, this was a book that Stephen Smith published the year APHA was founded. And it's a set of papers and essays that he had written. And it was amazing to me, first of all, to think about my flyleaf history. The copy I have was given to Dr. John M. Woodworth. And Dr. John M. Woodworth was the first superintendent of the Marine Hospital Service. Matter of fact, I read that he not only organized the service, he designed the flag for it, and among his other good works. And this given to the surgeon, who was very much involved in all the activities of the time. And it was finally given by Stephen Smith. So here are some of the chapters in there that Stephen Smith wrote about prison justice, about suicide in the tombs of the prison, about women as physicians. So these are among the many things that we have, the journal articles on Walter Reed, who gave the first publication on the etiology of yellow fever. And I want to move it up to today. This is an article by Liz Fee and Ted Brown talking about the unfulfilled promise of public health, deja vu, all over. And Ted will make whatever comments he feels little, but the point is we're connecting history to today to tell us about what it will do to illuminate our path in the future. The last category I want to talk about is collecting media, literature, and art. And this is an illustration from Stephen Smith's book. This was a Remington portrait of the fight at the waterhole. This is still the water rights were from the days of the first the Native Americans and on. And this was a recent poster that we had for the 123rd American Public Health Association. So these are just samples of what we can do, examples of public health trails in Massachusetts, how we can provide also recreation. I've always seen photos of Stephen Smith as when he was 98. This is a picture of Stephen Smith when he, around the time he founded the American Public Health Association, a professor of medicine. He wrote a poem. I got a copy of this. He was a poet, a published poet at 97. Because the people were so interested. And on the back of it, he was editing this poem. If you can see the X's, he sent it. It was a typed letter on the back signed by Stephen Smith, talking about the obvious delight he had in living so long, but it showed another side of him, not wooden figures, but real people. And I will say who was the editor. I want to turn this over to Ted. It was published in Good Health Magazine. Who was the editor of Good Health Magazine? It was John Hershey Kellogg, one of the two brothers that invented Corn Flakes. And I read in a doctoral thesis, so I can have some factual backup, that it turned out that John Harvey Kellogg was a medical student under Stephen Smith at Bellevue Medical College. And as a poor practicing Seventh-day Adventist, penurious student, he couldn't eat everything that was available. And he was trying to figure out what was there, a nutritious breakfast that would fit the good Seventh-day Adventist ideas of nutrition, and at the same time you could have it in a hurry. And they formed a lifelong connection with each other. So lastly, I just want to conclude and ask Ted for his comments and then open it up to the audience. Stephen Smith in 1921 at age 98 said on the 50th anniversary, so let us on this most auspicious anniversary look backward and learn the lessons of experience which it teaches us before we take a step into the uncharted future. So let me turn it over to Ted for his comments, and again, I appreciate you coming, and we'll have some discussion after that with your ideas and thoughts. Ted.
Thank you, Jay. I apologize for my unfortunate schedule, and we'll have to leave right after my remarks. I would love to participate in this discussion, and I know that's going to be the most fruitful part of this whole session, the engagement, and I'll be here in spirit, but I can't be here in person. I also would like to channel Liz Feet, who has been mentioned several times. She's here in spirit, though she's distantly in China right now, but she fully supports this project and is very much working with us in every phase of it. Let me just say a little bit about the work that Liz and I have done in connection with the history of public health and the history of the association. We first began working closely together in 1996 when we were preparing what turned out to be the November 1997 issue of the journal. It was the first ever, I'm hoping there'll be others, issue of the journal devoted entirely to history. And that was to commemorate the 125th anniversary of the association. The association had been founded, Stephen Smith as founding president, in 1872. 1997 was the 125th anniversary. And we recognized that it was a general policy of the association. We were given license to go ahead and produce an issue that consisted entirely of articles on the history of public health. It was not so much about the history of the association or the history of any of the divisions of the association, sections of the association, but rather the field of public health in general. In the process of doing that, we really invigorated a form of publication in the journal that went back to 1972 when George Rosen began it. He had been editor of the American Journal of Public Health. He was stepping down as editor, and sort of part of his decision to leave was that he was given permission to develop a special column called Public Health Then and Now. That column, in which historians look back at the past and try to draw lessons for the present, has been ongoing continuously ever since 1972 when George Rosen began that, and Liz and I now co-edit that together. Every month, or almost every month, there's an article that features a set of perspectives and insights about the history that tries to make the connections exactly as Jay's been talking about between the past and the present. In fact, if an author submits to us, a very fine historian submits an article that's a perfect piece in itself, but has no present relevance or the order, the author doesn't draw it out. It may be obvious to us as editors, but the author doesn't state it. We send it back to the author and say, you haven't made the connection. This is only about public health then. Where is the now part? And without the now part, we don't want it for this column because we're trying to use history as a method of instruction and of deepening insight. know, that whole column is based on the very principles that Jay has been articulating. We also created over the last 13, 14 years that we've been working together two other columns. One is called Voices from the Past, in which we take a small excerpt from the past that has great insight and power, and surround it by a biographical context and a large historical context, so we can understand when we read it now why this particular public health author said that in 1942 or 1893, and try to say something about the author, what motivated him or her, and what motivated that particular article statement in the context in which it was written. We also have a small section called Images of Health, in which we just take a very graphic image, which often tells a story in more than 1,000 words, but then try to contextualize that in a short accompanying message, mini essay. It's interesting, though, when I think about this in the context of Jay's overall objectives to capture the history of the association, as well as the history of the field at large, that the first article that Liz and I ever did was at the beginning, about the history of the association per se in any form, was at the beginning of this year, in the January 2010 issue, when we made the Voices from the Past column focus on the journal itself. The journal was, first issue of the American Journal of Public Health was in January 1911. And what we republished was the initial editorial explaining to the reading public what this new journal was about, how it fit into the field of public health, how it would contrast to other journals that were already in the field, and that was the voice that we allowed to speak again in the present. That's really the beginning of a more systematic look at the history of the association, the history of the publications of the association, the various sections of the of the association. And let me just make a few comments about that as I race against the clock. One, it's been mentioned, Linda Ray Murray mentioned today that the Occupational Health and Safety section is going to be celebrating soon its 100th anniversary. She also mentioned that the Environmental Health section is soon going to be celebrating its 100th anniversary. As a historian, I begin to think immediately about what's the context? Why in the 1910s would those sections have been created? And then I think ahead. Why was it not until the 1940s that the medical care section was founded as part of the association? Now, we fortunately have a very good history of the medical care section by Arthur Visseltier, now deceased, who was a great historian at Yale for many years, who helps us understand the context, what were the battles, the struggles, the differences of opinion about the role of medical care within public health. And that would explain why there may be a 50-year or so time delay between the founding of sections on environmental health or occupational health and safety within the internal workings of the association. But what about the external workings of the association? What was going on in medical care? What were the big issues that might have put that to the forefront? And back in the 19-teens, what were the large issues in occupational health and safety and environmental health that would have pushed that to the forward to make them legitimate sections for the American Public Health Association? And the first associations I come up with, I haven't done any research on this, I think, of course, of Alice Hamilton and the real beginning of the field of occupational health and safety, industrial hygiene, as it was called then in the progressive era. What was that all about and how was the association responding to it? I think of Teddy Roosevelt and conservation and the environment in those large political and cultural terms as probably part providing some of the context. But we have to learn these things. If we're going to do a good history of the association, you can't just do a chronicle of it was founded on such and such a date, and here were the key people, and here are the founding documents. That's a start. But what makes it really interesting history, compelling history, history that tells us, teaches us lessons for the present, we have to know these larger contexts. We have to know the larger societal context. We also have to know the larger institutional context. What was going on in the association? What were the issues that people were engaged about? How do you do that? What are the sources? Well, some of the sources Jay has already mentioned exist within the American Public Health Association offices. There is an archive. It's not a very large archive, but it does contain some key documents. It contains key reports. We have, of course, the entire record of publication of the journal. The journal for many years would not only publish scientific peer-reviewed articles, but it would also publish reports about what happened at the annual meetings, what's going on in the association. So for at least the first 30 or 40 years of the journal, it's a very rich source in print of the history of the association, which you can reconstruct from it, and some of that can be supplemented from materials in the archives. But my sense is, just from learning about what some of the contents of the archives, it's not going to be as rich as we would like it to be. It hasn't been collected as systematically. That can be supplemented, but it's a lot of catch-up. Doesn't mean we're completely lost. Many of the sections have maintained their own histories, their own archives. And if we're going to understand the association and its role in American public health overall, we have to understand what those sections and caucuses and SPIGs and so on were about. Many of those have already begun their history, have written up history, have collected archives, and part of the mission for this session is to find out, through an inventory, what resources already exist, what resources are in formation, how can they be brought into this project, how can they be made relevant to one another. But there are also other kinds of very rich and useful archival material. We can, for example, focus on key presidents of the organization. And I think of CEA Winslow, for example, who was a student of Sedgwick, by the way, in his public health education. Winslow was president of the 1920s. He was editor for 20 years or so. He was a major public health figure at Yale and advisor to the League of Nations Health Organization, WHO. He did all sorts of important things. His papers are in large part at Yale University in the archival collections there. But they're not just about his life in public health at large or his international activities. I'm willing to bet, based on my work in archives elsewhere, that is that there's a considerable body of relevant material there about the American Association, the American Public Health Association. So if we're going to start putting together archives and linked archives, we're going to have to explore the papers of presidents and where they are. Another very important president of this organization was Paul Cornelli, the first African-American president of this organization, elected in 1967, if I remember correctly. Some of his papers are at the National Library of Medicine in the History of Medicine Division, and they have been cataloged and very rich, and they reveal important things not only about American medicine and public health in that period, but also about the association. Why did the association elect its first African-American president then? What were the internal politics of that? It will reveal a great deal about what was going on that we need to know if we're going to really construct this, the history we're looking at. There are also very important individuals who were not presidents. Editors of the journal, very influential for 20 years sometimes, a tenure that long. Or intellectual leaders of sections, or people that everyone turned to who gave key addresses, got major awards to the association. And some of their papers are available. Milton Romer's papers, for example, and that would tell us a great deal about the association. There are important themes to track down, and Jay has already mentioned some very, very important themes. But we have to look at those themes in a context, and we have to balance an appreciation of the richness and achievements of the organization against, now here's the professional historian speaking, we have to balance that against an objective and critical assessment of the organization. We can't just be cheerleaders. We have to be willing to acknowledge that sometimes the association lagged behind major trends in the country. Sometimes it led, sometimes it lagged behind, sometimes it may even have avoided important issues in public health. Sometimes some of the sections challenged the central organization and thought of themselves as ahead of where the association was in its priorities and policies. If we're going to write a history that's truly engaging, that's faithful to the historical record, we have to acknowledge these possibilities and explore them objectively and open-mindedly. We can't just do a heroic history and say all was good, because that will not have any plausibility and won't allow us to teach our present and future generations, because it just doesn't make sense. No organization has ever been all good. And we have to recreate a history of this organization that has the warts and bumps as well as all the bright spots and the achievements. And finally, the last thing I really would like to say that I would have time to say is that though we can construct important continuities of themes, social justice, for example, that seems to be there at the very beginning of the organization, we have to avoid the fallacy that people sometimes fall into when they do history, and that is to assert too much continuity with the past. that even if some of the same words were used, the words may not have the same exact precise connotation and implications. And we have to be careful about using language and tracking them back. Just a gross example, I'm not saying this applies to the association, but it should give us pause. If we look at the founding documents of this country, with all their glorious rhetoric about freedom and liberty and so on, we have to acknowledge also a certain degree of blindness or hypocrisy and realize what status of manhood Negroes were accorded. They were not full men in the Constitution for all that talk about liberty and justice. Liberty and justice for whom? And we at least have to be alert to the possibility that when we find words that make us vibrate with enthusiasm, that we're not misreading them. We need the context, we need the original papers, we have to understand them so that we can see not only what is continuous, but also what may be discontinuous in our history.
Yeah, thank you, Ted. And I think a key point, too, that I did admit, and you've really amplified, is that it is to look at the discontinuities. It's to be a true record, because it's sometimes in our imperfections that we can really see the whole. What I'd like to do is to just to open it up for I'm just skipping through a few things. I was struck, and I want to open it up now for comments, by the Iowa Public Health Association and their recent 85th anniversary publicized this, and it struck me like our great history hunt. So we want to do that and to begin that process. Is there anyone here from Iowa? Would you mind mentioning, just saying a few words about your project and how you ran it? And then we'd like to have, again, a general discussion about ideas, please. Great. Well, congratulations. And thank you for volunteering to say a few words. I think I wanted to underscore the idea that we want to have separate, on our pilot, pages or places for sections, SPIGs, caucuses. So there is that kind of space that for example, Iowa, and again, I know the many histories that exist and update it. The idea is to start collecting, not to have this edited final version, but to find out what's out there and what is the best way, as Ted is saying, to organize. And that's part of the website. I did want to mention, if anyone has come in a little later and would like, before they leave, to fill out a contact form. And let's open it up just for discussion. There's not a big schedule for this, but any of the thoughts that you have, please.
I'd like to say a few words. I just came in, so I don't know what's already been discussed. I'll turn them around so I can see everyone. My name's Myron Malukian. I'm a past president of APHA. I was president in 1990. And I'm probably the only person in the history of the association, I think I am the only one, who's been chair of the Committee of Affiliates and also the chair of the Intersectional Council. And I know when I first got involved with APHA in the late 60s, there was always a lot of tension between science and action, between the affiliates and the sections. What we tried to do was bring them together in the late 80s. Now, lots of people have different perspectives on what should be the history of APHA. Whatever we do, I hope it's something that's a readable, user-friendly document. One of the weaknesses of APHA is we try to please everyone. When we try to please everyone, we end up with nothing being done. And I hope that with this document, however it turns out, that it's user-friendly so that when people look at it, they'll want to read it. Now, there was a history of APHA document, I think, the first 100 years. Are you building on the next years after that?
Yes.
Okay. So if you're building on, take a look at that. I thought that was done well and interesting. It didn't go into the tensions and things that occurred within the association. But it talked about some of the landmark things that were done by the association. And the other thing is, other people are going to be looking at it. So I would hope it is something that we can all learn from, but it's user-friendly and it touches upon all of the different strengths and weaknesses of APHA. One of the things I could never understand is why we have so few members. When I was president, I think we had about 28 or 29,000. We were shooting for 30,000. And now I think it's around 25 or 26,000. And I still kind of understand that. I've always tried to get members. But I think we want something that we can be proud of, that we can learn from, and pass from the board as well.
Thank you, Myron. So other comments? Yes, Teresa? Oh. Yeah, as I say, this is the collection part, and the pilot is to see what is the best way to collect things, but to have a kind of running commentary on there where people can talk about topics, or I'm actually hoping that people who have special interests could link up with each other and share the resources, just as Ted used the example of how much is around everywhere. And Myron, you're right about the user-friendly. We want to make it have rich material in there because this is a visual age as well as, for many people, an age of short attention span. So we want to have a little summary of things, and then those who want to go into depth, we would also be able to provide. Again, you're just taking advantage of the cyber age. But right now, we're trying to keep it very informal. And so that's the other thing to communicate. No one has to write a scholarly article with 10 references. If someone has a thought or a lead, that's what we're trying to collect. More like a blog, you know, a wiki and a blog function. Because that's the first thing, is our ownership of this as well as the exam. We are going to try to put up some videos. So to begin again, and the idea of the pilot is to show some of the categories, make it easy for people to start critiquing and giving ideas. Renee, did you? And
Thank you. section on occupational air and safety health in 1911 and environmental health in 1911. It seems to be related to the progressive movement in the United States, and which was just during that decade. But it would be interesting to know whether there were similar things happening in England or in Sweden or in other industrialized countries. So I thought that would encourage some comparative studies like this.
And that is among our ambitions. I want to make a point that I was in Mexico City at a meeting and had suggested and had talked about APHA. I always do. But I pointed out that in the period of some 25 years, at the 1890s till the year 2000, just before World War I, there were five presidents, or six, I believe, presidents of APHA that came from outside the United States. And it included Canadians, it included citizens of Mexico, and one from Cuba. So that's the kind of comparison. And the other comment I would make under affinity organizations, the Royal Society for Public Health will make a presentation, always does, and we have a relationship. So I've talked to them, and they're giving me some leads on our colleagues in Britain who do the comparative studies, and likewise I've spoken with people in Canada. So I think these are possibilities that will and potentials that we will explore. Yes. Yes, they do. And even before that, you know, this is the 100th anniversary. For several years, beginning in 1873, I happen to get a copy of this, they annually issued, the association issued what they call public health reports and papers. And for those years, it has all the presidential addresses. And then the Massachusetts, I'm going to have to remember this, Public Health Association, for several years they were published through Massachusetts Hygiene. I think it was the Journal of, I'm not getting the title right. And then the association began its journal that marks the 100th anniversary. So there's a whole set of other papers that go from the very beginning of the association up to the beginning of 19 of our journal, and we need to capture those.
So we're going to go back 100 years then?
Yes, back to the beginning, back to our 130. And I may say that's part of the task is to revisit the earlier history, as Ted Brown was saying, so we could take a more critical phase. I remember our founder, Stephen Smith, said that you shouldn't let all the members vote on things, because then it opens up the association to fractious and unproductive debates. I often think of that sometimes. He was right, but it wasn't very democratic. So we again want to put in the context in time. That's where I think this is an important phase of seeing, as you will suggest, what's out there and what are some of the possibilities, and then come up with the sustainable structure and plan to do this. And I will say that, as I say, the emphasis, we also need to do a lot of work. It's not only the past, but this big lacunae from 1972 to today. So it's collecting a lot of the contemporaneous history and that we need to fill in and the those issues too. So any other comments? Well, let me just conclude by first of all just saying thanks, and that's what's on the form, this half a dozen things you can do, or send me any leads of to whom I should send a form. In other words, other people that you know that we would want to involve with us. And please, that last one down there in red, which may be below your sight line, tell us what else, as you were doing, Myron, tell us what else you'd like to see or suggest. I mean, this is kind of our ownership, and it's best for us to tell the story. So I want to thank everyone for coming. This is the beginning, and I've agreed to be the secretariat for this, and it's Liz and Ted, and we're going to expand the historians on there to include others. So we will be working on that. George is Benjamin, and I'm hoping the executive board, all of us leaders, the past presidents, we all have papers. We all have suggestions to make. My last little story will be about Paul Cornelli. I did not know Paul Cornelli well, but he gave me some very good advice. Well, not going into what it was necessary as a young person. When I was at Howard maybe 2 years ago, I was asking about Paul Cornelli. You know, he was a professor of community medicine there. And the then professor of the department said, oh yes, we have a lot of boxes of material. The family doesn't want them. We don't know what we're going to do with them. And they're now in the Stokes Library at Howard, as well as at the National Library of Medicine. So getting the sources and trying to identify things that can disappear. That volume that I showed that I have of the Shattuck Report, I didn't have the slide of the flyleaf in it. It was rescued from the trash of the Massachusetts Assembly by the then Commissioner of Health of Massachusetts. And it was sent later on to Ira Hiscock, one of our presidents, who then passed it on, this is in the flyleaf, who passed it on to the then Commissioner of Health of Connecticut, who was an authority on TB. So I'm saying trying to identify these things. My last little thing about imaginative projects, things that you might want to suggest. Paul Cornelli and Les Breslau made a bus trip to six cities in the United States. They were president and president-elect at the time. And Les can't recall all the cities necessarily, but I'm trying to track that down because a project might be to revisit those cities today and to see what public health is like. So I want to think of some things that can engage, as our founders did, communities in this as well. So again, I'll leave the last word to Myron, but I do want to thank everyone for coming, and please participate. Thank you so much, and spread the word.